The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
For me, footwork has been something that's got me out of trouble on more than one occasion on and off the pitch, so I'll go with that one.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Republic of Ireland 21s, very briefly on that, missing, I don't know how many of the senior players are actually would have been qualified to play. Is Jason Knight too old, or is he still underage?
I think he might just miss out, but Adrian Bamadele would be there. Gavin Bazuna would be the goalkeeper. Adam Eda would be still available. Troy Parrott would be in there
as well.
So there's quite a few. Aaron Connolly be, depending on...
Knight's only 20 still.
It's the time when the... when it starts, so he may well have been, and Knight then as 20 would have been in there. So look, every team is missing several players at under 21 level who are in and around senior squads, but like, that was a huge, huge win for them last week. And like, Ollie O'Neill is only 18. He's with Fulham. He was on the bench for a League Cup game a couple of weeks ago, but 18 years of age, the composure, because when the ball came to him initially, this was the very last kick of the game. When it came to him initially, he thought, hit it first time, but he just settled himself and gives Ireland half a chance of qualification. They still have to go to Sweden. They still have to go to Italy. But they've definitely given themselves a chance. And I was at the game against Italy on Friday night and it didn't feel like it was a very good Irish performance. You kind of had to keep reminding yourself, though, that actually they're playing Italy here. They're playing a real quality outfit. And the players who stood out that day, I thought, were Coventry and Kilkenny in the middle of midfield. And again last night, that I would say will be the last time Gavin Kilkenny will play for the Irish in the 21s, because he has a huge future with the senior team ahead of him. He's playing pretty much every week in the middle of midfield for Bournemouth, who are top of the championship. He just can control a game, got a real zip, a real energy about him in midfield. Coventry is a bit more of the Josh Cullen type. Maybe it's too easy a comparison, but he's a bit more of that Josh Cullen, just nice, tidy little passes. But Kilkenny has a little bit of an X factor about him in the middle of midfield, and I'd be shocked if he's not in the senior squad for the friendlies in March.
What, when you say he's a midfielder, central midfielder, a six, an eight, a six and a half?
Well, the two of them sort of played as a double pivot. But whereas I think Coventry's natural game feels to be the one who sits that little bit deeper, Kilkenny has the ability to play as that number eight, to skip past people. I think he has a better range of passing. He has a bit more energy about him as well. Maybe they are the Cullen and Hendrick of the 21s, that they fit together perfectly, and it's a huge step up, clearly. But the fact that he's, Bournemouth are running away with the championship and he's playing for them in the middle of midfield suggests that, you know, Scott Parker certainly believes that he's good enough for that level. You hope that a promotion to the Premier League means he continues being good enough for that level. But yeah, he's another one who's through that sort of St. Kevin Boys conveyor belt of talent. So even against that Italian midfield, he was the one Irish player who really did look as though he was comfortable in amongst them. And also, Will Smallbone is there. Will Smallbone, you might remember, is with Southampton, has played in the Premier League quite a few times. He's had some really difficult injury problems. He also looked like he was slightly better than that level. So maybe he's another one who can force his way into the senior team over the next while.
Evan Ferguson came off the bench last night. He's the superstar at Brighton.
Yeah, still. What, 17? Just gone, 17. Yeah. So let's give him a little bit of time. But he's at a good club. We know that. You know, Brighton seem to have a brilliant academy system. They were desperate to get him. They've had him involved already in and around the senior side. So listen, if he gets a run of games, Brighton are obviously having an outstanding start to the season. So I can't imagine Graham Potter's going to be taking a huge amount of risks, or compared to this time last season, doesn't necessarily need a goal scorer the way he did this time last season. With how they're playing at the moment. So give him a couple of years as well. But yeah, there's not the same buzz around the 21s as there was with Stephen Kenny, for obvious reasons. And you know, that Ireland-Italy game on Friday definitely felt a couple of steps below the Ireland-Italy game from a couple of years ago, when you had a star-studded Italian side with two or three of the players went on to make the Euro squad. You had, you know, Yadida, Connolly, Paris. But still, I think for Ireland to go... to only concede that second goal in the last minute against Italy, had a brilliant chance to equalise a couple of minutes later, and then to go and beat Sweden shows that there is still enough talent. The 19s won as well yesterday. So it does feel as though there's a good bit of momentum behind things, but as we know, there's that huge step up of 19s, 21s to them actually playing first team football for the clubs. But again, I think if you're getting two, three, four players out of every 21 squad, you'll be pretty happy with life.
Is Crawford doing a good job? Like, I mean, you said that there's the less, like, lower profile for obvious reasons there, but if you take away the result last night, have things been trending in the right direction under him?
Well, it depends who you're comparing him to, I guess. And the 21s go about their business a lot more quietly when Stephen Kenny was there, and they were getting huge crowds, and he did seem to have a certain generation of definitely attacking players who were able to elevate them to another level. If you compare the 21s, what they're doing now, to what Noel King was doing, where it seemed to be some sort of a, I won't say a finishing school for English-born players, but certainly the entire aim of the 21s seemed to be to keep English-born lads interested and keep them in a green jersey for as long as possible at the expense of homegrown players. I think he's doing a really good job. Like, you're just beating Sweden and you've run Italy close. As I say, it still seems, even though 4 points behind Sweden, a massive step to go to Sweden and to go to Italy and probably win both those games to qualify. But there's such a good mix in that squad now of good, homegrown, talented players. Several lads from Bowes in there. Colin Whelan started against Italy, you know, scored a huge amount of goals in the first division from UCD. There's players from around Europe. Conor Noss started the other night from Borussia Mönchengladbach, and players at the English Academy. So, like, that's what you want this to be for Ireland. Yes, if you qualify, it will be a massive, massive achievement. But I think, actually, that bringing the players along, getting them used to the system, and making the step up to the senior level be quite seamless, I think would be good progression. Results-wise, you look at losing to Luxembourg, losing to Montenegro, it's not ideal, but you go beat Sweden and you can counter it with the draw, with the performance against Italy as well. That's, I think he's doing a pretty reasonable job. I think if the last two games had gone horribly wrong, he probably would have been under a bit of pressure. But I think for Ireland, who have never qualified for an under-21s European Championship, I think it is making that step up and providing players and a route for Stephen Kenny. That is the ultimate aim of it.
Yeah, one thing about, I know every country will lose their very best young players, but most countries actually have a more established senior team than we do at the moment over the last couple of years as a result of all the things that have come before and that last generation that we've spoken about a million times. So it would be unusual for you to lose five players who are as senior as the Republic of Ireland have lost. If you look at, you know, even the best young English players, there's always a slew of players coming through that they can still pick Premier League starters in many positions too. So look, at 7:41, I'm going to tell you what's coming up between now and 10 o'clock on the show here on OTBAM. Nathan's with us on the way until about 8:05. Gregor Paul is going to rejoin us to talk to us about the New Zealand assessment of what happened to them at the weekend. Orla McGrath is going to talk to us about Camogie at 8:30. Sports page is 8:45. Finn Lynch, one of our best sailors, finished with a silver medal at the World Championship at the weekend. I'm going to talk to him about that, and going to hear from Sean Ingle at 9:30 about a dark day for English cricket, as the Media and Sports Select Committee at Westminster had Azim Rafiq before them yesterday, detailing the racism that he suffered in two spells as a player at Yorkshire. That's all coming up between now and 10 o'clock. If you want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you. 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. OTBAM is live with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. Your mow's coming along nicely.
Thank you, as is yours.
And the handlebar thing is going to be tricky to pull off.
When are you planning on doing it?
I mean, I'm doing it now.
Is that like, I mean, are you not going to twirl it or something like that? Is that how
it'll be Christmas before it actually happens. Nathan, I know you love charity. Oh, sorry, you hate charity. That's what it says. You just decided you couldn't do it. You were too embarrassed by last year's kind of dead caterpillar. It's not
going
to happen.
If I'd known that you were essentially allowed to cheat at Movember, as you have done, Jer, and start several weeks beforehand, I could just do what you've done and start right now and shave off the beard and just leave the tat.
Do it.
But I thought the whole aim was you shave it all off on the 1st of November and you see where you are at the end of November. That's what I did last year. And to so horrific results.
You decided you could. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You weren't going to do it again.
Exactly. Nobody appreciated it. But I'm very impressed with both your efforts.
He does love charity. It's a nice compliment there at the end. That's a good charitable donation. You're right. I think we both cheated, didn't we? I think we both got in a couple of days early because we're desperately insecure, I think, is probably the real reason for that.
Let's talk about what happened at Derby County yesterday and the impact it's going to have on the Republic of Ireland. Another points deduction because they've just been really, really badly run. And we're assuming that guarantees relegation to League One next year. Is that the case?
Oh, it's sort of a mountain to climb, isn't it? From even the mentally, what it must do to the players to find yourselves in that position where actually, you know, they'd made quite a bit of progress at the start of the season to give themselves half a decent chance despite the initial points deduction of staying in the league. But to go back again, like this will be, geez, like Wayne Rooney's getting a good job if he can keep Derby in the championship after this points deduction. We're obviously looking at it from an Irish point of view, and Jason Knight at 20 years of age, that if they're relegated, Jason Knight is not going to be playing in League One football next season. So where does he end up? And actually, you know, do they need the money in January? Do they need to go and look at doing a deal? And is now the time for him to get out of Derby and get a move maybe to a Premier League club, maybe to a top championship side over the next couple of months? So, yeah, can you see Derby surviving? I just think this is such a mental setback for them.
You can't really see them survive. I mean, so they're 18 points off safety. Oh, no, is it four go down? Or is it three go down? Either way, it's 18 points off safety, and they've only got 18 points from the first 17 games of the season. So they need to massively outperform their first half, assuming that there's some uptick in performance. It's not impossible, but it probably seems impossible at this stage.
Yeah, they'd need basically playoff form. So if they're minus 21 points, they probably need to get to about 60, 61 to survive in the championship, which would almost get you into the playoffs. So maybe the fact that they were able to do that already shows that they're just about good enough to survive, but I just can't see it.
It's even better than playoff form, to be honest, because if you take the points they are behind now and the teams who are higher up the table, like, yeah, the second half of the season would actually put them top of the table to get safety if everybody performs at the same level. They've been at close enough. So they're gone. Will they sell Jason Knight straight away, or do they try and keep him to the end of the season? What's the point in keeping him to the end of the season if you're already gone? I don't know. Is it better for him to go, and where would we like him to go? Because we don't want him to go to a club where it's going to be, oh, come and sit on the bench for us for 18 months. We were like, get in and play every week.
Well, do you want him to go to a Bournemouth or a Fulham, who look like the two best teams in the championship, or are heading to the Premier League, and you get half a season playing in the championship, and then you do enough to impress the manager that you should be starting in the Premier League next season? You're right. The one place you don't want to end up is signing for Norwich, where your faith is pretty much set in stone that you're going to be back playing championship
football.
If he plays
football for Norwich for every game in the Premier League this season, I'd be happy enough with that. But like, if you look at what they've done with Billy Gilmore, can't get a game like that. That would concern you. Now, new manager comes in, and if Dean Smith signs him, then it's like, right, he's his guy, as opposed to inheriting him. Like, if Steven Gerrard signs him and decides, my mate told me to sign you, he says you're great, and he gets straight in the Villa team, I'm like, great, because he could play there. But there's not many other teams in the Premier League he's going to get into.
Is he getting straight into the Villa side?
Marvelous Akamba, playing every game at the moment.
Yeah, it's still a
give me some nice
sizable step up from. He is still very young, so for any 20-year-old to burst in to a Premier League side and start playing every week in midfield, like Billy Gilmore is a good example. Billy Gilmore described as the best talent, Scottish talent of his generation, and bizarrely can't get in the Norwich team. And maybe that's because he's come through a Chelsea academy system where they play a certain style of football. And actually, Billy Gilmore only works at a Chelsea. He only works at a top quality team and doesn't really work in a relegation scrap, whereas Jason Knight, you sort of feel with his style of play, probably would work in a relegation scrap. But like, there's still a bit to go, I think, with Jason Knight. He was outstanding, clearly, off the bench. You want to see him start doing it from the start of games. You think of the one competitive game he started, I think, was against Luxembourg, which was...
Nobody played well.
Maybe played one of the Nations League games as well from the start. But I think that's where, say, Benna has been so impressive, actually, because in one way, it's easy to come on the last 20 minutes of a match and wreak havoc. To come on and do it from the start of a game and to play back-to-back games and maybe struggle at the start of the game against Portugal, but in the second half, he's the one who took the game to them, even with that ploy, which was clearly a tactical ploy that Ireland have, which is give it to Ogbeni right at kickoff and just get him to run straight at the opposition.
Good
Paul
idea.
Merchant style. And that was on both occasions, it resulted in a free kick. One of them in a really dangerous position against Portugal. The other one against the last night against Luxembourg wasn't quite in the same position. But it's a brilliant tactic, actually, it turns out, if that's the end result every time. But I think there's a big step up, and Ogbeni has shown it, from making an impression for 20 minutes to being able to get in and involved. And probably that's what we need Jason Knight to do, to come in, to start games and to have a level of control in those games that actually you're making still the same amount of impact over the course of 70, 80 minutes as you are in the space of 20 minutes. But that's time. That just takes time.
It's really interesting when we kind of look at the chart of these players, and if you had a hack for Football Manager, where you would actually let them go, because it does feel that the Norwich thing is maybe a bit more of an outlier. Like, you had Ali McCoist the other night on the Scotland game, kind of having a dig at Norwich, being like, that's some team, that Norwich team, that Billy Gilmore can't get into it because he was obviously excellent for Scotland. That I wonder, have we just kind of got a little bit stung by maybe Omar Bamadeli? Granted, he's in there now, but at the start of the season, and obviously Adam Eda, that they're kind of like a separate scenario. Because if you look at all the other players, it seems that maybe Aaron Connolly, I think that the blame is kind of at his door in terms of his own lack of progression over the last little while. We can't really point to a club. What are the other situations in the Premier League where an Ireland player has been harshly treated?
And we don't have any. Yeah, through.
So, like, I actually just think that maybe Farke, and now he's gone, was perhaps a harsh judge of a young character and a young player, that maybe Jason Knight might surprise a few people by actually making that jump up to a lower Premier League team. It may take a couple of seasons for it to happen, but I think maybe we've been a little bit stung by all of our collective Norwich experiences.
Yeah, and every player is different, every manager is different, and as Jer said, Dean Smith comes in at Norwich and may have a very different way of looking at things. I think it's definitely going to be more difficult for Adam Eda to make the breakthrough at Norwich than it is for Andrew Omar Bamadele. But like, that is what Premier League managers do. They trust the older players. You know, you talk to any manager and say there's always a bit of inconsistency with younger players that you just have to accept. And when you're in a relegation scrap and you know you're going to be in that, that's probably just a little bit of a risk that you don't really want to take. Wouldn't it be nice to see Jason Knight maybe go abroad? It's highly unlikely to happen, but to go and find yourself a
Borussia Dortmund.
Well, just go to Borussia Dortmund there, Jason, and lay things on a plate for Erling Haaland.
Inter Milan. Yeah. I mean, look.
But those sort of, it doesn't need to be Borussia Dortmund. Go to a PSV Eindhoven or go somewhere where there's a different style of football and you can learn something slightly different, but you'd expect it'll be a Premier League or a higher up championship side that
that'd be all right.
Ends up in.
We would take that. Or is Celtic a possibility in any of this? I don't know. I mean, the Celtic fans very unhappy with the fact that they're signing Danny Mandrew. They're suspicious of the channels with which this player has arrived, saying that he doesn't fit the style of play. Is this a good move? Is this something that we're thinking is a good career prospect? I can't see a downside from his perspective, because if he can make the team, then fair play to him, and it's going to be a step up immediately for him. So I don't know. Like, Celtic fans being precious about stuff is not new. So what's your instinct on this?
It's a good move for Danny Medreu. I think personally for him, there's no question if the opportunity comes to sign for Celtic, you're always going to take it. And Liam Scales has made the same trip just a couple of months back and is already starting to get himself involved around the first team. Celtic supporters are obviously looking at the Dermot Desmond connection and thinking, like, is this a feeder club for us now? Yeah, are these players at the level that we want of a feeder club? Do we have to take a Shamrock Rovers player every transfer window for a certain fee to keep everyone happy? And Celtic supporters still see themselves as, you know, being a big club that they should be going into the transfer market. Is he going to be the difference in a title race for them against Rangers in the final months of the season? They probably look at what he's done for Shamrock Rovers and is it 14, 15 goals this season and say, is that proof enough that he can make a real contribution? But for him, I think it's an absolute no-brainer. And then you just got to take your chances. You just got to, when you get on that pitch, score some goals, win them over. It's the same for any young player going over there. It's, you know, Liam Scales, you're coming in as a left back or as a centre back. You know, you can probably go about your business quietly. But as a striker at Celtic, if you're on the pitch, they're going to expect you to score goals. And, you know, Mandreo at times is hit and miss. He's, you know, clearly a lovely technical footballer and has been crucial for Shamrock Rovers winning the title this season and has scored plenty of goals. I haven't seen enough of Celtic to say exactly where he is going to fit in, but well, I'd assume if they're signing him.
Is it possible that he can play a little bit deeper?
I think he can. Now, you often see him for Shamrock Rovers dropping deep, getting himself involved, and, you know, seems very, very comfortable at doing that. But I think that, again, is the problem, that when you go to a club the size of Celtic and you're signed as a striker, that they expect you to score goals, yeah. and doing the other work can get you as much stick as anything else. But yeah, hopefully he does get those opportunities, because it's, you know, again, it's a blow to the League of Ireland to see a Danny Mandreou leave and the talent that Danny Mandreou has. But here, Jack Byrne, it seems, is coming back. So maybe it's a nice old swap for Shamrock Rovers.
Okay, there's two quick other stories we want to talk to you about in golf and Gaelic football. Before that, I want to tell everybody about our Cabri Roadshow, which is coming up. Arsenal and Ireland fans don't want to miss our next Cabri FC Roadshow. We're going behind the scenes with the Arsenal invincible Robert Pires, and also Gunner star and Ireland captain Katie McKay. Will be joined by former Arsenal strength and conditioning coach and Ireland rugby legend Gerry Flannery as well. It's all thanks to Cadbury FC and their club partnerships, granting you behind the scenes access at the Premier League's biggest clubs. Coming soon to OTB Sports social channels. I want to have a listen to this. It's the football pod of Paddy and Andy. It's back after Tommy's holidays. Former Cavan footballer Cian Mackey, who's now starring for Longford club Mullinocta, is the special guest this week. Before Cian joins the pod, Andy gets talking about Mayo losing another of their generational talents to the AFL, Oisín Mullen. Have a listen.
Yeah, he could go huge, but I think what's key for him is the club that he's went to. He's went to Geelong, and a girl from the old ladies team is over there, and Rachel Cairns, obviously. Zach is over there, Mark Connor is over there. That gives
good contingent there from already. Yeah.
A good contingent. His age too, like what has always struck me about Pierce Handley is Pierce goes over there at 18 years of age.
Yeah.
Right? And stays there. Now, Begley was gone. Colin Beggs was probably gone about 2 years after Pierce went over, I'd say. And Handy stuck it out and made a career for himself. Like, that is unbelievable. If that wasn't sport now, if that was just business and you were going over there, making a career over there, and by 30 you'd done what he had done and stuck at a career that long and going over at 18 years of age, you'd be in the business post. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You're a baby. You're an absolute baby. Whereas you go over at maybe 22, 21, 22. Those, you know, you can huge development over those two
you
or three.
You can,
Whereas at 18, you're coming out of secondary school. You haven't been to college. You haven't. You don't know anything.
No,
you know things, but you don't.
And you make it. So I just think with Oisín, I just think it's going to, like, he is 3-4 years there where he can elevate his career. He can go after it. Them guys are going to look after him. Zach Tui set the marker for them at the club. Yeah. They're a real competitive club. They're right up there.
Yeah.
And like I've said this before, I rate footballers in kind of percentages, the top 5%, and an athletic form and strength and power and everything that you need.
Hey, and looks. He's got the X factor.
He's the best looking man.
Because he's enjoying.
Imagine that man in the best, but and the pink boots and the hair and the ponytail. But he's a top 5% athlete. And the point Paddy's trying to make there is that your Mayo, you produce possibly, if you're lucky, 3 or 4 of these every 10 years. And he's one of them, and he's gone. And we've lost 2 in the last 20, which is hard to take.
They're the emergence.
Yeah.
Listen, best luck to him. Amazing. Class. Hey, it's great to see it.
As a person, as a young fella, as a human being, he's an incredible, like, this is why I think he can do whatever he wants, because I sound like a dad now when I'm going to say this, but he's got manners. Like, he walks into a room, there's no airs or graces about him. He walks in, he fits in with the group, and he's just absolutely brilliant at kind of everything. Like, he's just one of those guys. So listen, he can do whatever he wants in the world, and fair play to him.
Can't wait to see what he does next. Right.
Get him on the pod, Paddy, or Tommy.
Hoping to.
Tommy, come on, will you?
Let's see what happens.
That's
what this last 5 minutes has been about. Where I'm just going to send it on to him. See if he can get on. Anyways.
Right. Nathan, they used you in the hype video. You and Richie and Joe were the ones hyping up the Geelong fans.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I couldn't believe when I saw this last week. They cut out the bit at the start where we said that this was a disaster, an unmitigated disaster for Mayo, that Oisín Mullen was leaving. They left that bit out and left in the bit where we were just talking about what a talented footballer he was, as if the people of Mayo and the people of Ireland were just delighted to see their best young footballer leave the country. But yes, they didn't apologise, the Geelong social media staff, but it's fine. We won't take legal action just yet. But it's disappointing. It's damaging. But I think I agree with what I think Owen was saying last week, that Mayo will find a way to win a lot of big championship games without him. But you do wonder, when it comes to All-Ireland finals, you know, would a Pierce Handley have made a difference? We just will never know.
Yeah, no, we do know. We do know.
Over the next decade.
We absolutely know that Pierce Handley would have made a difference. You drew some All-Ireland. You're saying he's not worth a single point. Of course he is.
No, but if Pierce Handley stays in Ballyhadreen. Who knows? Maybe he gets waylaid along the way and he doesn't become, you know, Mayo's central midfielder for the next 10 years. Things can happen, but
things can happen.
With Oisín Mullen, there'll always be things that can happen. Things always do happen, Gerard.
Some
you know.
Young one in Ballyhadreen would turn his head and that'd be the end of it. She'd move him down to Cork
wasn't
or something
off,
stupid
wasn't
like that.
Better off. Likewise with Oisín Mullen.
That's around the subtext of that.
The nightlife in Kilmaine is hardcore, so he's better off out of it, isn't he?
No. I just think it's interesting that this happens less and less to some of the other counties, like the Dubs got Kieran Kilkenny back after 6 months. Whatever they needed to do, they did. Stephen O'Cumber has come back. Now, Mark O'Connor's still down there.
He is. He's a teammate of Oisín Mullen Mundy. Like, that's...
Clifford was not allowed to go.
Yeah.
Why is there not some... Look, your life here will be better. This is what we're saying your life will be. This is the offer we're making you in educational terms, in financial terms. Was there not something that somebody could have done? I mean, there's a lot of...
Bring back Tim O'Leary.
Whoever. There's a few
different scenarios that you're talking about there. And one of them, and I think I said that when this came out of, and maybe that has happened in the background where people have said, listen, what can we do to make it worth your while to stay here in Mayo, to stay here in Ireland? And he decided, actually, I just want to go and I want to have this experience. But some of those players have gone and come back. As you said, look at Tyrone. Players have gone and come back. So he hasn't even gone yet. So let's see how he settles in down to Geelong. Let's see how things go for him.
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe in a year's time he's decided this isn't for me. Like, Pierce Hanley is a great success story and somebody that I think an awful lot of people in Mayo are very proud of what he's achieved. But because of what it's been at the sacrifice of, from a Mayo point of view, there's always a part of you that go, what might have been? And while people want to see Oisín Mullen do well, I'd imagine an awful lot of people would love if actually he got over there in 6 months' time and said, nah, I'm a little bit homesick. I'm back. And he'd be welcomed with open arms.
Very quickly, Greg Norman and Rory McIlroy are in the news. We've got about two and a half minutes to do this. What's going on? So obviously, go on.
There's a lot going on. So we've heard for, years at this stage about a rival to the PGA and European Tour backed by Saudi money. And it's taken its first real steps over the past couple of months where Greg Norman has come in to run a company that is going to get involved with the Asian Tour that is backed by Saudi money and is going to put itself up as a rival to the PGA Tour, huge prize funds, and is going to try and lure the very best players in the world to come and play on his tour instead of the PGA Tour. Now, this isn't the Premier Golf League, which is also backed by Saudi money, which is a slightly different thing, which would mean you have to totally leave the PGA Tour, that you would give up your PGA Tour status, you maybe give up your major status, and you basically get maybe 30 million, 40 million pounds guaranteed every year to go and play in this. They're only looking for the best 24, 25 players in the world. Hasn't really taken off at all. This feels like more of a soft entry. Like Greg Norman, notorious for basically going wherever the money is the face of this and maybe gives it a legitimate face for some people. But Rory McIlroy is over in Dubai for the DP World Tour finale playing this week. He's also head of the Players Advisory Committee on the PGA Tour, which is the most influential role a player has. So it's understandable he has come out and said, this is not for me under any circumstances. Cannot see why I do it. And I also really doubled down because Norman is the most high-profile appointment. But behind the scenes, it seems a few retired former PGA Tour officials have also joined to give them a bit more leverage. And McIlroy said, when I saw about those appointments, my stance has been hardened even more that there is no way I'm going. So a little bit of a war brewing between the two tours. It'll be interesting. Does anybody jump ship? The sense at the moment is that it's the veterans that they're looking at. So a Phil Mickelson, or if he ever gets back fully fit, a Tiger Woods, a version of the Champions Tour that none of the Dustin Johnsons, Brooke Koepkas, Jordan Spieths, Rory McIlroys right now are ready to go. But if one of them was to move, maybe a few of them would move. And then you do have a proper split in golf where you don't see the best players playing against each other. But it does seem McIlroy is the golden egg in all of this. He is by far the biggest current star in the sport. He's probably the most influential player in the sport by a mile. And if he ain't going, I think it's going to be very hard for any of the other leading players to go as well. So we're going to see more Saudi money coming into golf. We're going to see players probably play some of these Asian events and take a little bit of it.
Well, that's
but I don't
it.
Think we're going to see too many of them.
That's the genius move, isn't it?
Aligning
with the Asian tour. and say, oh, no, no, we're completely legitimate. We're just part of this. It's just an extra, it's like a Rolex series, except it's backed by Saudi money.
And remember, the Saudi Invitational has been taking place for the last few years, and Dustin Johnson has gone over and won this.
Dustin Johnson, when you say he's not going to go, he might go. I can see him going.
I just think none of them want to go right now unless they knew that six or seven more of them were going. And he's still at an age where he's, you know, in the top three in the world. He's one of the best players. He's contending for majors. Just won the Masters last year.
Think about the hello money for him right now if he was to do it. Like, guaranteed $100 million over the next 10 years.
Sacrifice is maybe slightly too much. Okay. But I think from a business point of view, look, the clearest sign that this is sports washing is the players that they do think they're going to get. The Tigers, the Phils, the Ernie Els, Greg Normans. Because nobody has any interest in seeing them playing in reality. Nobody cares. The Champions Tour is on every Sunday night and all these guys are playing against each other. Nobody cares. If you were doing this to make the sport better, you have to get the very best current players in the world. So I think this is a nice little sideshow. And you say maybe what's happening with the Asian Tour will be the more damaging long term for golf in the way it just lets people ease in.